You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Hello, everybody. It is Past Jack here to introduce an interview with the cast and crew of World Building at the End of the World, which is a talk that's happening as part of the Writers and Readers Festival. I'm here with David Large, who's the chair, Ben Stenbeck, cartoonist.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Octavia Cade, who is a short storyist, novellist. And we're here to talk about the event. We'll start with you, David. Just give us an overview of the event and how it came to be.
How it came to be? Well, as an overview, it's a joy to talk about genre and to talk about horror and science fiction and to get comics into a writers' festival. And at the previous Writers Festival 2 years ago, I was lucky enough to speak to Pip Adam and Sasha Stronach about sci-fi and their latest novels. And we pitched what felt like a strong session with Ben and Octavia, and the board liked it, and the organisers liked it, and here we are. And so we're going to talk about genre, about horror, about media, about collaboration, all sorts of things. It'll just be a chat on stage, and time for audience questions. I'm really looking forward to it.
Fantastic. So, Ben and Octavia, let's start with from the very start of your careers, basically. How did the interest in your particular medium and the particular genre in that medium come about? We'll start with you, Octavia.
All right, well, I've been a science fiction fan since I was a kid. All my family was into science fiction, so my sister and I basically grew up on it. And one day when I started writing just short stories as a hobby, it didn't even occur to me to write anything other than science fiction because, you know, that was really the only genre that I was interested in. And eventually it started going quite well. And so, yeah. It's still the only genre that I'm really interested in, apart from how it intersects with, you know, horror and fantasy.
But who were the authors? Like, what was the first sort of text you can remember?
Under the Mountain was one of the major ones for me growing up in New Zealand. I grew up in Nelson, and where Morris G lived, and sure. He would do school visits, and one day, you know, when I was a little kid, I wrote to him, you know, "Dear Mr. G, where do you get your ideas?" And he wrote back, which was
fantastic.
The greatest day of my life. When I got that. And what I really enjoyed about his work was that it was local. Not so much Under the Mountain, which was in Auckland, whereas I was in Nelson, but books like The World Around the Corner, which was set in the park across the road from where I lived.
Sure.
I mean, if you're a kid, a lot of the sci-fi and fantasy you read is sort of often this medieval, faux European setting. Mm-hmm. And to have something so solidly set in New Zealand was amazing for me. And Under the Mountain scared the crap out of me for a very long time.
Sure. We'll get on to scaring people later. Ben, what was the sort of introduction for you, and what was the first text you can remember?
I think for me it was probably just the odd comic here and there that appealed to me that just had really creepy horror elements. And, you know, I never really got into superheroes. You know, at a very young age, it was just the odd comic I could get here and there that had like these weird kind of horror themes in them, like a Conan comic.
Sure.
Had this woman sacrificing people to this cave monster, and there was this series called Rom the Space Knight, and that had these, that was a weird mixture of sci-fi and with horror elements. But I've always had an intersection between, you know, horror and sci-fi and fantasy, and you know, you can mush all those together really easily.
Sure. And I guess Hellboy mushes quite a lot of those together.
Yeah.
How did that start? How did you get involved?
Well, I was always a fan of Mike Mignola's work, the creator of Hellboy. And so when he started doing Hellboy, I followed along, and I always wanted to get into comics. And then the first job I had in the industry, it's about 2006, 2007, was this kind of horror comedy comic that Mike Mignola happened to see, and we had an editor in common, so he kind of gave me a tryout.
Sure.
And we've been working together ever since, really.
Yeah. Awesome. Nice crossing of paths, convenient.
Yeah.
So, spec fiction, horror, dystopia, we're all sort of in that realm. When you started reading, what were the sort of anxieties that were reading and writing? What were the sort of anxieties that were prevalent at the time? And have the anxieties that sort of affect the horror or the scarier elements of it changed over time? Are there new anxieties that have come up? Octave?
Yes. Well, for me, especially with the horror, the most fun horror for me has always been the creature horror, the animal horror. The thing where you can't see it coming, like Jaws, you know.
Absolutely.
You don't know where it is. You're always looking around and for this thing that is better adapted to the environment than you are. And so the idea that you couldn't see the horror coming was what really appealed to me in the horror I read as a kid. Now the horror that appeals is the horror that you can see coming, because it's very much, for me, climate-focused.
Sure.
And when you engage with the science and when you have a background in science, the horror is there and it's barreling towards you, and suddenly the problems that you can't see become minute in comparison.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know if... Like you said, the fun side of horror. I like the fun side of horror. I like monsters and guts and for it to all be fun. And I get really turned off straight away by horror that plays it straight. You know, like torture porn, you know, like movies where
Hostile,
it's just Saw. Yeah, Hostel, Saw. That kind of stuff just completely turns me off. And as a kid, that's the only thing that gave me nightmares. I watched Helter Skelter.
Yep.
It was a series about the Manson murders, and I saw a little bit of that as a kid, and I couldn't sleep for months afterwards. And that's the only stuff that actually scares me, is what, you know, that one in a million thing that some human beings are capable of doing, and that's not fun.
No.
I don't really associate anxieties with horror. I more associate fun with horror.
Sure, like, it's levity. It's separation.
Yeah, from my teenager has the same thing. They've just made their second short film for school, and it's just full of heads exploding and blood gushing out everywhere, and it's all just fun.
Sure. Any examples of stuff that maybe sort of embodies that fun idea of horror? Because I know some people will be thinking Peter Jackson's early...
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a kind of similar feel. Like, Bad Taste is just an enjoyable nonsense. But even when it's not trying to be funny and silly, I still think of, you know, most schlocky horror stuff. You know, you've got a monster, you got someone's head being pulled off. Yeah, it's, you know, I don't take any of it too seriously. It's all...
Sure. So I guess we can pivot into quite well then. We'll start with the graphic novels. Talk us through the sort of strengths of that medium in terms of horror.
Well, it's a visual medium.
Sure.
So it's like similar to film, but it's not film at all. It's got its own systems and rules for how you can discuss things and how you can control how the story unfolds. You know, like there's stuff with doing a horror comic. If you want to surprise someone, it has to be on the page turn.
Sure.
Because there's that thing where you turn the page and you're instantly
kind of scan the whole thing.
Like a film equivalent would be if you immediately see the next 5 or 10 minutes of the film.
Sure.
All in one go, and then you have to start at the beginning.
Sure.
So if you want to surprise anyone, it's got to be on the page turn, on the first panel, on the page turn.
You've said that, and now I can think of seeing that in comics without even realizing that that's why it was always there.
But I think comics are more suited to like creating atmosphere, creating like a slow, you know, which is something Mike Mignola's really successful at is he'll place a series of images together that aren't necessarily part of anything. They're just a little gargoyle from the corner of the room or something that all goes together to kind of create an atmosphere. And that's something that I really like about comics, is trying to build those kind of atmospheric moments.
And what about the novella, the text, I guess? Just
yeah, I enjoy the brevity. I think anyone who reads a lot of science fiction and fantasy and horror is used to the predominance of those doorstopper books. And I read a lot of them growing up. I still read some occasionally, but more and more I just lost patience with them. I mean, if you can't tell a story in 200 pages. Sure. And so I think what I really enjoy about the short form, especially the short story, is how much it requires of your reader. You don't have the space to spell out everything for them over and over and over again. You have to rely on them to use their brain. And I enjoy that. And sometimes, you know, you get strange responses from people who have clearly chosen to use that. And you've just got to let that go. But I think it's an interesting way to write, too, because you're constantly telling yourself, you know, do you really need this? Red pen, out it goes.
Are there any writers that come to mind that do...
I was just thinking H.P. Lovecraft.
Sure.
Really,
I can't stand it. Most,
really?
I thought that might be controversial.
He was incredibly problematic. But.
He's not scary. I don't find him scary at all. I think H.P. Lovecraft is a writer who finds the world around him terrifying. I mean, he's terrified of science, terrified of people.
The outside. And
what he does in his stories is layer on these terrors over and over and over into this great toppling pile that he's terrified is about to fall on him and find squash the bastard. I don't care, but it's not frightening. I'm sorry it isn't. When he's talking about these eldritch horrors, all I could think is, please, can we have one in a lab? Just open it and see how it works.
Ground it somewhere. Ground it.
I love bringing that up. Sorry to interrupt. Bringing that up. The Cthulhu mythos, Dunedin is canonically a part of this.
The ship that kills Cthulhu came out of Dunedin Harbour.
We're a degraded society and community. I probably met the students down there back in the day.
He was like, well, if anyone's going to do it, these guys will. Awesome. Fantastic.
You were going to mention,
shout out to something that's close to your heart.
Oh, what do I really like? I like a lot of the fungal horror that's coming out at the moment. Because I think that's creepy, the way it seeps into you. I think T.K. Kingfisher had a really good fungal version, right, in a novella form of The Fall of the House of Usher in the past few years. Of course, naturally, I cannot remember the title, even though I was, you know, looking at it 2 days ago. But it was brief and creepy, and there are very, very few books where I have to stop reading in the middle of the night because it's like, nah.
Yeah, I won't be able to fall asleep.
That was it. There were these awful taken over rabbits and...
Yeah.
This fungal mycology was taking over the entire ecosystem of the tarn around the House of Usher, and it was the creepiest thing.
How do you feel then about The Last of Us? Do you feel like it's kind of monopolizing the fungal horror thing a bit?
No, I think there is a lot of fungal horror out there at the moment. I'm actually writing a chapter on it for an academic book that's coming out next year. And what I find appealing about it, it's really the same thing I find appealing about animal horror. It replaces us in the ecosystem. It knocks us down the food chain. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with fungal horror. It says you're not even really important enough to be prey. You're just soil for us.
Have you watched Matango yet?
No, I haven't. No.
It's a Japanese kind of 60s. So it's quite, you know, Daigo and... But it's fun.
Yeah.
It's good. It's based on is it A Cry in the Night? It's like one of the first fungal horror stories. I think it's called A Cry in the Night. Anyway, based on that.
The film Matango, is it?
I think it's Matango.
It's Matango. Yeah.
60s or 70s?
Yeah.
I love a good Japanese horror film.
Everyone turns into mushrooms.
Yeah. Awesome. So, just finally, I wanted to talk about something that the inspiration for the question came from a dystopias paper that we did in university. That a big topic of contention in the sort of students of the class was when it was brought up about whether spec fiction writers, horror writers, and science fiction writers have a responsibility to A, comment on society. So we'll start with that, and then B, provide alternative pathways for humanity, which is a big sort of, you know, encompassing question. But like, do you think that there's merit to having to find solutions to things, or do you think that it's fine to just entertain? We'll start with Ben.
I don't think there's any responsibility. Sure. I think anyone who wants to tell stories and make stories is entitled to do that however they want.
Sure.
But I think it's good to at least think about that stuff and maybe try sometimes. I don't know. I don't feel like I've got any answers to anything.
Sure.
So, and I would hate to, you know, I'd be the last person to try and tell people how they should or shouldn't be doing anything, even though everyone's wrong about everything.
Yeah. I don't have the right answer, but I know that you're all wrong.
But yeah, I think it is good. I mean, yeah, but like I say, I don't have any answers to anything. So. Sure. But I think it's healthy to speculate, you know, to
throw stuff at the wall.
Just throw stuff at the wall. Yeah. Yeah.
Octavia?
Yeah, I don't think that science fiction writers have a responsibility, but sure. I do think it is fundamentally the purpose of the genre to explore these future options. I mean, that is basically what science fiction is. You take this possible future invention or a future event and you put it into society and you say, now, how do we react to this on multiple levels? What are the possible problems that this might cause? What are the opportunities that this could give us? So I don't think it's really the responsibility of the science fiction writer to provide answers, but I do think they are very much engaged in providing an arena for discussion within not just the science fiction community, but with everyone else, because honestly, they've been doing it a lot longer than most non-genre writers, and when it comes to things like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
I actually kind of wanted to touch on that. I don't know where to throw it in, but we can touch on it now. Do you feel like science fiction has... It started off as like a serial genre. You know, a lot of it was printed serially in magazines and things like that, and there wasn't a lot of respect for it historically, or, you know, occasionally got denigrated as not literature, you know. Do you feel like we've come anywhere with that?
It still is denigrated as not literature in many circles, but I think there is a growing realisation that there is a lot of very fine literature being put out in you know, the speculative era, and that in many ways it engages more productively with the problems in the world around us, because it gives you that sense of distance. It uses metaphor in a way that general fiction often doesn't, and that can allow people to engage with these problems without feeling targeted in very specific ways, I think. So,
and I think the fact that the university has Octavia here as a Burns Fellow, I mean, that speaks to a level of acknowledgement of genre writing and the importance or the value of spec fiction.
I'd like to throw it out there for the audience that Octavia is looking very bashful.
Octavia is thinking of the draft of her horrific toxic algal bloom and what it's doing to the people of Dunedin, and wondering if the Burns Committee is going to be regretting their choices once they read the book.
I don't know if you name them.
Anything to add on science fiction? On the sort of or horror as well. Horror's definitely experienced.
I draw comics, so being taken seriously isn't really something I get
sure.
a lot of.
Sure. Do you feel like I don't want to throw, you know, obviously a very cliche name to throw out there, but do you feel like Alan Moore, people like that, did anything for comics getting taken?
I think so, possibly, but then he walked away from comics in disgust. But I mean, not really. There's so many, you know. I saw a copy of Mouse in my kid's history classroom last week. So there are these books that have, you know, done big things, but they tend to be singled out as well. That's special.
That's different.
The rest of you, it still has comics still has that kind of stain of comics are a genre. You know, it's guys in tights punching bank robbers.
Rather than a medium.
And it still hasn't really escaped that, even with like Watchmen or Mouse or any of
the...
But, you know, it's, I guess, better than it was in the 50s.
Sure. Also, well, I think... If we shouldn't talk too much because we'll spoil parts of the chat that people or the questions that people might want to ask when they come see. So let's just get the details from David.
Yes, well, we're on at 1 p.m. in Conference Room 1 in the Glenroy Auditorium Dunedin Centre complex. There are door sales open. I think ticket sales so far have been healthy, but there will still be door sales at 1 o'clock. And we'd be delighted to see everyone and answer questions, and Ben and Octavia will be available for a few minutes, I think, afterwards to sign books and sell books and sign books.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic. It's been lovely chatting with you today. And I hope everything goes smoothly and there's no fighting with the audience at the chat. So thank you, Dick.
Cool. Thank you.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.